Michelle, are you ready?
Yep.
Good morning. I will call the board of the regularly scheduled meeting of the Board of Supervisors for this Tuesday, April 2nd, 2013, and ask that members of the audience please join the Board of Supervisors as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Would you like me to sing you a song?
All right, with that. First item on our agenda is public comment number one. This is item where members of the public may comment to the Board of Supervisors on items that are not on today's agenda, that are on today's agenda. We will carve out time for discussion on some of the other items, but if there's anybody who has anything they want to make sure they call to our attention, now's the time to do that. And seeing no one moving immediately to the microphone, we'll move on to consideration of the March 26th meeting minutes.
Move approval.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Minutes pass. Consideration of personnel actions. We have all items listed.
Move approval.
Second.
Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Personnel actions pass. Consent agenda. Please add one utility permit and one road closure. So utility permit, 1351. Road closure, 1351.
Move approval with noted changes.
Second.
Toot.
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda passes. Public hearing items. First consideration of Ordinance 221 rezoning certain lands located in Section 23 of Franklin Township. Charlie, how are you doing this morning?
Good. How are you doing?
Good, man.
I refer to this case commonly as the Russa rezoning. The property owner is Dean Russa and Carol Jacobs Peck. Looking at the general property location, it's an area of land on the north side of West Riverside Road, approximately 300 feet west of Purvis Lane and 250 feet east of the South Skunk River. Property address is 569 West Riverside Road. The amendment area we're looking at, approximately 3 acres, and the current zoning in place is A1 agricultural with greenbelt conservation. Property is classified as a residential use as it does contain a single-family dwelling, which was built in year 1895. The land use framework map definition, it does fall under the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, which is a component of the county development plan. The Fringe Plan does designate the property as rural transitional residential, which is a subcategory of the rural and urban transition areas. There is also some natural areas located on the property, and this is within 2 miles of the city of Ames. Looking at the map here above, this is the surrounding property owner map that we sent out to all the surrounding property owners. You can see the property here and the kind of green hash mark, West Riverside Road and the South Skunk River right here, and Ada Hayden Park just to the west. Looking at a few site shots that we took, this is looking generally over the kind of vacant land that is being proposed to be rezoned. It's looking a little bit more to the west. You can kind of see where the existing single-family dwelling is right in this area. Kind of looking the same direction, gives you a perspective with West Riverside Road in the picture there. This shows the existing single-family dwelling, and again, looking over the vacant area that's going to be rezoned. Lastly, looking back towards the east up Riverside Road, you can kind of see, again, the vacant area and where it would take access onto Riverside Road there. The proposal in front of you, ultimately what they're looking to do is create 2 new residential building lots and place the existing single-family dwelling on another lot. The new lots will be sized approximately 1 acre each, with the existing single-family dwelling being placed on the remaining 5.25 acres. The new development lots would be served by existing Public Street, West Riverside Road, Alliant Energy, Xena Rural Water, and the West Story Fire Department out of Gilbert. looking at the applicable regulations, those were listed in your staff report. I won't really go over them. I know we've done quite a few rezonings with the board, so I don't think it's imperative to go over those, but we'll go into them. Looking at the conformance to the Story County Development Plan, again, the Ames Urban Fringe Plan is a component of the County Development Plan. It does designate the property as rural urban, in the rural urban transition area. That area is to accommodate rural development that can also be accommodated with municipal jurisdiction at some point in the future. The area coordinates public preference for broad choices in rural development with orderly and efficient future transition between land uses within the municipal limits and unincorporated areas. The areas are not necessarily expected to be developed under sole municipal jurisdiction, but because of their proximity in relation to the city limits, development of those areas must be carefully orchestrated to be compatible with city development patterns. The areas designated in the rural transitional residential are located in areas where urban infrastructure may not be in place for a time period beyond the planning horizon of the fringe plan. The rural transitional residential development is designed to transition seamlessly into adjacent rural residential and agricultural land uses, providing buffers where necessary to separate residences from particularly intense or noxious agricultural activities. On residential densities within the designation are between rural densities and urban densities, approximately between 1 acre or 1 unit per acre and 3.75 units per acre. Map here does show the Ames Urban Fringe Plan designations. The green area is the natural area. You can kind of see again, it does hug the north boundary line of that property around the South Skunk River. And the yellow area is the rural transitional residential area. This kind of zooms out a little bit further just to show you more of the surrounding areas. Again, you can see Ada Hayden to the west there, and pretty predominant rural transitional residential uses within that area. Looking at the statement of intent, the R1 district states that it is designed to provide a district for single-family detached dwellings at a low density. Further states that subdivisions created within the R1 district may also include community facilities and open space uses with special provisions to protect the residential character of that district. The district is not intended to permit isolated rural dwellings incompatible with surrounding land uses and not in conformance with the development plan. Looking at surrounding land uses, the proposed amendment area is located in a moderately dense residential area within Story County. The area is surrounded by Riverside Heights and Purvis residential subdivisions on its south side. There is a 1 acre farmstead on its east side. The applicant's farmstead will ultimately be on the west side and the South Skunk River on the north side. Looking at the land uses within 1/2 mile of the site, looking at a percentage based, 39% of the land uses are tax exempt. That includes ISU and City of Ames property. About 34% of it's residential, 24% used for agriculture, 2% industrial, and 1% commercial. However, when you look at the total parcels within 1/2 mile, there are 137 total parcels. 77% of those parcels are used for residential, 12% are tax exempt, 8% are agriculture, and 3% are used for commercial and industrial. This map here shows the existing zoning in the area. The area that is proposed to be rezoned is in the yellow hash mark here. You can see residential zoning to the south, a little bit to the north as well, the Greenbelt Conservation District, excuse me. Went a little bit fast there. The Greenbelt Conservation District, again, generally surrounding the South Skunk River, and then that light blue area is actually light industrial zoning that includes the U.S. Filter property just to the north of this subdivision here, or excuse me, just to the north of this area across the South Skunk River. Zoom out a little bit further, kind of show you again that the R1 residential use is a pretty predominant zoning district in this area. This shows the actual land uses, the yellow being residential, the blue being industrial, and the red being commercial. Everything that shows no color is actually agriculture. And again, just zoom out, show you that it is a pretty predominant residential area. Looking at environmental resources, the proposed amendment area does include some land located in a flood hazard area as defined by FEMA. It does include areas designated as natural areas on the fringe plan and some land that is currently zoned greenbelt conservation. Those are primarily contained to the northern portion of this parcel around the Skunk River, and they do not exceed 50% of the total amendment area. Looking at the LISA score for the property, looking at the site assessment portion for that, it scored a 79 out of 200. And on the total LISA, it scored a 107 out of 300. So that shows us that it is a low-value agriculture land. Map here shows the floodplain boundaries kind of in the light blue. Again, you can see that pretty much surrounding the Skunk River. The green lines here are elevation marks. So you can see, again, in the for a majority of the area, that's looking at being rezoned relatively not too much grade there until you get down towards the river and the tree area. This shows, again, the zoning district. And you can kind of see where that Greenbelt Conservation District is primarily contained to some of the areas that have greater slopes on the property. Looking at the Planning and Zoning Commission's recommendation, they did recommend conditional approval on Monday, March 4th of this year to the Surrey County Board of Supervisors. The two conditions being that, one, the applicants work with the Surrey County Environmental Health Department to evaluate the septic system for the existing single-family dwelling prior to any development of the site. Second, that the official zoning map amendment area only includes those lands that are currently in the A1 agricultural zoning district, and that the Greenbelt Conservation District be preserved on the property. With that, the four conditions that we listed in your staff report are on the screen, and I would be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Questions for Charlie before we open the public hearing?
As far as input at the meeting, was there much input from citizens in surrounding areas at all?
I'm trying to think. I think there was a few surrounding property owners that showed up. I think any reasoning for them to show up was pretty much just to find out what was going on and making sure that it wasn't a large-scale residential development that's going in out there. And, again, as of right now, the applicant is only proposing two new lots.
Anything?
All right, I will open the public hearing on Ordinance 221 and ask if there is anybody who would like to address the board. Seeing no one moving, I will close the public hearing and turn to the board for consideration.
I would move option one, that the Board of Supervisors accept the recommendation from Planning and Zoning Commission and approve the proposed rezoning with conditions, and adopt Ordinance Number 221, approving the zoning map amendment on first consideration and second consideration for Tuesday, April 9th, 2013.
I'll second that. We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Passes on first consideration. Second consideration set for April 9th. Moving on to additional items, consideration of Resolution 1358 regarding voluntary annexation by the City of Ames. And this is Leanne. Good morning, Leanne.
What is before you with the first resolution and the second additional item, too, is a resolution for voluntary annexation of the City of Ames. The first one is Resolution Number 13-58. This is what we've been calling over the past several months the Athan property. If you'll recall, you saw an amendment to the Ames Urban Fringe Plan in regards to the site, and this is to facilitate the annexation is to facilitate the ultimate development of the land for, I believe, an assisted living facility. Before you in your packet, you had three different resolutions. You could act in one of three manners. One, you can act on the resolution saying you support the annexation, you don't support the annexation, or take no position. And on the screen is in the yellow hatched area is the location of the proposed annexation. It's to the west, northwest of the City of Ames. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
It's been before us a couple times, right, Leanne, as we talked about. What was this board's action when it came to amendment of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan? Did we take any position?
That's been a while ago, so I had to ask Charlie. I don't
Because as I recall, Chuck Winkleblack came to us and we talked through the possibilities of this. I remember the amendment to the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, but I'm not sure what our role
was. It was essentially to take no action on it, knowing that the city of Ames was ultimately going to annex it, but I believe we put a time frame on it that if annexation does not occur within that time frame, it would come back to the Board of Supervisors for review and action.
Yep. Questions for Leanne?
Oh, I think that's...
Or Charlie.
Or Charlie.
Yeah, that was my understanding.
We'll get Charlie his exercise, keep him moving back and forth. Okay, pleasure of the board.
This always confuses me.
Well, I think at this point, I think we want to... I would recommend support of the annexation. And I'm not sure exactly what the wording. I was looking for that here on the... As I'm scrolling down through that, Leanne, but the options. But
It's one of the three draft resolutions, and the second whereas would be whereas the members of this board are in support of the application for voluntary annexation is how the resolution. Now, therefore, would you like me to just read the applicable resolution? It's resolution number 13-58, whereas there has been submitted to the Board of Supervisors for Story County, Iowa, a copy of an application for voluntary annexation of certain properties situated in Story County, Iowa, a copy of which application and plat diagrams is attached hereto and by this reference made a part hereof, consisting of two parcels in Section 20 and 29 Franklin Township, known locally as 3699 George Washington Carver Avenue, consisting of 121.02 acres, and whereas the members of this board are in support of the application for voluntary annexation, now therefore be it resolved by the Board of Supervisors of Story County, Iowa, that its records shall reflect that this board is in support of the proposed annexation, and be it further resolved that a copy of this resolution shall be forwarded to the city clerk of the city of Ames, Iowa, dated the second day of April 2013.
Right after you started, I found it. But I'm glad that you read it. Yeah. Good.
So I'm hearing you make a motion to support.
I would move to support the annexation.
Mm-hmm. I'll second it.
A motion and a second. Further conversation. It feels to me like, and I just want to talk this through, that in the past we've taken no position on these. And so I'm just curious, Wayne, as to the rationale. If our past practice has been to take...
Well, but our past practice early on was to refer to the city of Ames and to see what direction they've taken. They, in sense, have taken action, to my understanding. I was at an earlier meeting. One of the outstanding things, if Charlie may correct me on, there was still some discussion regarding the rural water issue and so forth, regarding not only this one but other ones that was pending. But they had... put in place all the necessary steps to move forward, but they didn't want to make a final ruling until they knew for certain how things were falling. So I saw this as pretty much us going ahead and supporting the action that ultimately was being approved by the city of Ames. Since it also, because we're within the 2 mile, it was brought to us initially, and we took no action simply because we felt that it really was, we wanted to know whether Ames was going to move forward with an annexation option, and their intent is to move forward, from my understanding. Is that your understanding, Leanne? Yeah.
And as I recall, one of our concerns was what happens with the little, as it drops down and kind of into the floodplain, because as I understand it, the back part of this property drops down into that Squaw Creek floodplain, and we were basically informed that they were not planning any development kind of at the tree line as you look back from George Washington Carver. But once this is done, whether we take a position or not, once this is done, we're really out of it, right? This becomes all the city of Ames from this point on.
It really makes no difference what our position is.
Correct.
Well,
the state,
in reality, you're absolutely correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Whatever we do here today is not going to have any impact
right.
on this.
Right.
I'll second it just to move forward.
Okay. Further discussion? Hearing none. Motion in support of the annexation. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Story County Board of Supervisors supports the annexation. Second one.
This is going a little bit further east along Grant Avenue and 190th. Again, on the screen, that yellow hatched area. This one is a little bit unique in that it is primarily voluntarily, but the City of Ames is using what's called the 80-20 rule. About 81% of the land is voluntary, and the remaining 19, et cetera, acres are involuntarily being brought forward. That's in accordance with the Code of Iowa. It does allow that through a voluntary annexation, bring in non-consenting adjoining properties in order to establish clear boundaries for the city or to prevent the creation of an island. And if you look, if the bottom three parcels were not included, that they would be considered an island. So, again, three resolutions in front of you, one in support of, one not in support of, or one not taking any position. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
First time that this one has been brought to our attention?
Yes.
Okay. So how is this basically different than the one that we just approved?
You have not taken any action on this for Ames Urban Fringe Plan. I think this is a little bit different. I think Ames is actually going forward with the amending the annexation and bringing it in line with the Land Use Policy Plan.
Does the City of Ames currently have responsibility for all of Grant Avenue in this portion? I know there's part of it that comes back into the county before it gets ultimately down there to Bloomington Heights. But what I'm not sure of is when they annexed what was going to be the Rose Prairie subdivision, did they assume responsibility for all of Grant right there, or did we have a 50-50?
No.
Darren, do you know that?
They go to the center line.
So now, with this annexation, they'll end up taking all of Grant Avenue, except for that little stretch that would still be in the county, just right as you come out of Bloomington Heights and go up the hill right there, right?
Yeah, everything in gray from the city limits would still remain in the county.
Okay. Questions for Leanne?
I guess my question primarily would be, do you see any problematic issues that we need to be aware of that need to be brought to the attention of the City of Ames?
I think it's beyond the scope of just the annexation. It goes back to the direction you took last week, and that's in the discussion on the Ames Urban Fringe Plan and the urbanized areas and the growth patterns of the city. It's a larger than just the single annexation. So, no. To answer your question.
When you say that 80% was voluntary, does that stand to reason that the additional 19% were opposed to the annexation?
I don't think that they were so much opposed. They recognize, and just this is from my listening into the council meetings, they recognize that annexation is inevitable at some time frame. They're not actively soliciting and petitioning for annexation, however.
I would think that this would be more consistent with our past practices to take a position on this.
We have a motion for the board to take no position.
Second.
Motion and second. Further discussion. Hearing none. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Board takes no position on this annexation. All right. Leanne, did we have anything else you needed to bring to us this morning?
The only thing, we did receive notice of another annexation with the City of Ames, an invitation to consultation meeting to be held next Tuesday, April 9th at 7 o'clock p.m. That's for the Christofferson property. It's just there's Christofferson Park on the south side of Ames, just immediately, a little bit to the west of the Research Park. There's about there are two parcels under consideration to be annexed. I unfortunately cannot attend, but I didn't know if you wanted the board to appoint someone or if the board was going to attend or how you want to proceed with
this. Wayne, you're the liaison with Ames. What's your feeling on this?
Is there a reason for us? Unless we have some issues that we basically want to bring forth.
And again, this will be on your agenda in the future, too, for an action in some manner on a resolution.
Yep. I can tell you the last consultation meeting I went to, they were really shocked that anybody
showed up. Right.
Right. That's usually the way it is.
They weren't even really going to have the meeting until I walked in the door and they said, right. Oh, I guess.
Yeah. Right. If you'd like me to, I can email the project planner of City of Ames saying at this time we don't expect anyone from the Story County to be attending the meeting, but thank you for the invitation.
Right.
Which they're required to do by code of Iowa anyway.
Right. And if something comes up that you feel like one of us needs to be there, just keep us informed and we'll make sure somebody is there.
We'll do.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. 5-year program, road program, Darren Moon. Darren, how you doing today?
Good. Give me one second here.
Got a number of handouts you have on your table. We'll be getting to those. Essentially, this is a draft discussion of the 5-year program through years 2014 to 2018. I'll be looking for board input today, and I'll be back next Tuesday for official approval, so we'll have time for any board input or public input in the meantime if there's any projects need to be added or deleted. By Iowa code, we're required to submit this 5-year construction program to the DOT by April 15th of each year. Some general rules to follow. This just the first one's the main one. The programming of the project should be based on the amount of money available to spend on projects in that 5-year period. And the rest are pretty basic. You've all been through this before, so I'll go through these pretty quick. A bunch of factors in selecting projects for the program. The cost, the age, and at the very bottom, of course, are the funds available to do the projects. This is what we call the accomplishment year, 2014. This is what the board has already approved for local construction dollars in our budgeting process. So this step has already been done. From here on out, we're talking more of the other types of funds and how the program is put together based on those funds. But so the board had approved 3 new projects. These first 2 were carryovers from this previous year. So essentially we just added State Street, which is a coordination with the City of Ames, paving that, repaving. And then we had 2 smaller box culvert type projects. We did have $40,000 for some right-of-way. That was for North Dakota. I'll be getting to that a little bit more later. Had some developments last week on that. But essentially you approved $450,000 in local construction dollars. The additional was the carryover money from the previous year. So this is the format the program has to be in when we submit it to the DOT. It's hard to follow, so I'm not going to use this format for the discussion today, but it's available on the website and on the board agenda today. Just start with pavement side of things. Just a little history on some of our pavement ages out there. You can see, broke it into asphalt pavements and PCC pavements. We've got a couple here, a 47-year-old PC and a 40-year-old PC pavement. Over here, we've got some asphalt that some up by Story City are getting older, but just due to certain conditions, some pavements last longer than others, so they're doing fairly well yet. North Dakota is probably our worst asphalt one. That's, you know, getting to the 35-year stage. Just to put some general numbers together, we have 36 miles of PC pavement, 166 of asphalt. If you put a design life on those, being a little conservative here, it says we need to be doing just under a mile per year of PC pavements and about 6.6 miles per year of asphalt. So if you put dollars to those, your PC is going to cost you about $700,000 on average per mile, and HMA overlay is going to cost you about $250,000. So that's what we need to be spending per year to maintain the current system. This is what we have available. FM funds, we have just under $1 million a year. About, I'd say, a quarter of that is spent on bridges, so that leaves us about $725,000 for pavements. SDPs.
Darren, because our audio is available to the public, when you use the FM, would you just explain that that's farm to market?
Oh, sure. So people, yes, farm to market funds.
Thanks.
And STP dollars is a surface transportation federal aid money through SERPA. We get about $533,000 a year for that. Add those two up, and we have about $1.2 million a year, and we need to be spending that. So this is where you really see the bonding we did 5 years ago. We just finished that up last year, spending that money. But that really caught us up on our payments. But this shows you how quickly we can get back in the hole again. We were almost forced to bond because we had some payments falling apart and there was no funding available. But that bonding really helped us out on the payment side of things. This is a format I'm going to run through the projects with. It's a little small on the screen here, so follow along on your sheet. At the top it says secondary road needs and roads. We'll start on the roads, which is the payment side of things first. On the far left over here, if there's a number in the program year column, that means it's included in the draft budget. If there's no number over here, that's kind of where our wish list starts. I think I can just kind of summarize the payment side of things without going through every one of them. Not a lot of change to this from last year. Number 9 is a new addition. That's E23 Boone County over to Gilbert, and that's just an asphalt overlay needs to be done on that. We're going to seal coat it last year, but it was too far gone crack-wise to seal it anymore, so it just needs an overlay at the proper time to keep the life going on that. The other change was number 4, West 190th. That's kind of the Prairie Moon Winery area. We did have an asphalt overlay in that, but just due to the characteristics of that pavement, it's never been paved before. It's just been seal coated. It'd be too difficult to put an overlay on what's there because it rounds off. You wouldn't be able to compact it properly. So I think we're just going to change that to a seal coat for now. That'll buy us a lot more time on that road, so at a less cost. Other changes, really no other changes to the program side of things, but the wish list, we added a couple. Number 15, one we get comments on a lot about paving is a picture of it here, south of Huxley, 560th Avenue. We have a 1 mile stretch of gravel road here. The city of Huxley paved a portion here up to about here 5 years ago or so, and this portion's gravel. So there's actually two wish list items. One is to finish the paving here, which would include straightening out this curve, which kind of really ramps up the cost on that stretch of paving. But that's something the Huxley would like to see done too, and they'd help in the funding of that. This is a separate item down here, is paving this stretch of road. The sheet will show you. It's the south of Highway 210. Right now we only show 50 vehicles a day, so it doesn't get a ton of traffic. But the comments are, you got Polk County paved it up to here and stopped, and then we got paving up here. Like, can't you just finish that? It's like, well, yes, but it's locally classified road. It's not a farm-to-market road. It takes local funds, close to $1 million to pave that. We got Interstate half a mile one way, and then Highway 69 a mile the other direction. So it's on our wish list, but just no local funds to do it at this point.
Now the north of 210 right there makes a lot of sense, right? It's the south of 210 that there's not the traffic to warrant spending the dollars.
Correct. North makes more sense. It's just be more expensive. There's a huge ravine here where this bend in the road is, so that had to be filled in and a new structure put in there, so it would be more costly, but it'd make more sense to do that stretch, yeah. Let me touch a little bit here back on North Dakota paving. It's mainly this stretch we're talking about that has no shoulders, that pavement's getting in bad shape. The north stretch here was paved when Cameron School Road was done. So we're talking this stretch. We talked earlier in the year about straightening this curve out. It has a quick bend there. And we're talking to landowners about right-of-way issues, and it kind of got to the point where it was going to have to be condemned if we were going to move forward with that process. So we decided just to move forward with the straightaway portion. And right-of-way negotiations are confidential until they're done, so I can't really comment too much on specifics, but there's some large property owners out here that have no interest at all in selling any property to the county. So we're in a difficult situation where we either condemn it or we look into trying to patch the best we can. There's just no shoulders, so you can't put any more overlays on it because there's nothing to hold it on the outside.
Aaron, how far is that from the railroad crossing, the railroad there, and that little utility?
Railroad's not shown here. The North Dakota bends back, and then the railroad's down here, and that's a stretch, too. I think we'll do some little bit of asphalt overlay on that, hopefully this year, if not next. That's pavement's in bad shape, too. Thankfully, the curve stretch, the pavement's not deteriorating as fast because there's really no ditches there, so the area where we have ditches, there's no shoulder, the pavement's sloughing off because there's nothing to hold it up. But I want to make you aware of that now. I think when I come back next week, maybe we'll talk about it a little bit more in detail, and I got some other pictures of that. But
well, now that's Iowa State that has all that just to the
right here, correct. Essentially, we started a process of purchasing right away, assuming condemnation would not happen. If we want to go the route of condemnation, we'd have to start over from square one and follow the proper condemnation procedures and get things appraised. It's more costly, takes a lot more time to do, but we'll have to weigh those options. But in the meantime, I had this in for 2014, and there's a bridge down here. You can't see it on the photo, Onion Creek Bridge, and that was 2015. We couldn't do them both on the same year because we'd be these people would be in the middle with no way to get out. So for the meantime, I'm swapping the two projects, moving the bridge up to 14 and pushing this back to 15, and it'll give us a little bit more time to decide what we want to do with that. But
the Onion Creek Bridge, talk to us about that a little bit.
I got that later in the bridge presentation. I got some photos of that later I can show you, and so I'll bring that up again. Other projects on the wish list, the grant, of course, you just saw some photos. This area getting annexed, so that'll bring in the other half of the road south of Moose Road, we call it. But then we got the mile and a half stretch of gravel up to Gilbert that's on our wish list. But again, it's a locally classified road.
We stuck that on last year as a 2017, and now you've moved it to 2018 on this draft?
Yeah, and that's open for discussion. That essentially, if we don't have the money for it, they just kind of stay in the fifth year. But if you want to keep it moving up, we can do that. Just let me know how you'd like to see it in the program.
Yeah, the problem we're going to get into is that's an issue that's not going to go away. Eventually, Ames is going to pave Grant South to 190th, which is going to increase the number of cars coming out of Bloomington going using that route to get up to Gilbert. I mean, that's just one that's not going to go away for us.
We got a meeting with the school here, hopefully in the next few weeks, with the sheriff's office. We're going to sit down and discuss safety issues on gravel roads and how we can address those with the students. The sheriff is probably going to be doing a speed enforcement study we got some special funding for. And then after the results of that, we'll probably discuss other possibilities like lowering the speed limit, additional signage, stuff like that. But so those are some other discussions we're having besides the paving.
It's not going to be paved any time in the immediate future. So, well, yeah, the school opens in August.
Right.
I mean, it's not happening between now and then for sure. And we had conversations, and Darren, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but I felt like you had come down thinking that making a four-way stop there on 180th was not the right answer. I think that's something that should still be, we should talk about, understanding that it creates more washboarding and everything else. But we need to keep everything on the table in terms of how we're going to potentially deal with that whole area.
Sure. Okay. Next project on the wish list is University Elwood now, 530th Avenue. There was requests from web filings with their parking lot and dust issues with a stretch that's still in the county. There's been some developments. Iowa State Research Park may be stepping up to do some additional paving that might take care of the dust issue in the parking lot. But it's still going to remain on our wish list as far as this first mile goes, because this is right here is the new Ames yard waste facility. That's a brand new site. They've got their free day here in the end of this month, so we'll see how that holds up. But we got a number of residents that live on that road, so dust is going to be a real issue. We took the last 2 miles off. We did what we call our total regrades on those, and it's really held up good this spring. We just get better drainage on the road, and it holds up better. And that's what needs to be done over here on State, which is another issue we were talking about. But that's Iowa State-owned road.
Yeah, 530th or State, which one gets more traffic?
We do not have traffic counts on State because it actually doesn't show up on our map even. It's just blank because it's an institutional road, and so there's no data on it.
That's not even our road. State Street South is not even our road.
That's not our road. Okay. We have an agreement to do routine maintenance blading with the motor grader on that road. But
is that common?
I don't think there's many institutional roads in the state, especially gravel ones. I've never heard of another one. There may be, but it is a unique situation. We'll see how that goes. But right now, that 1 mile's in our wish list to pave. Some small projects. This one comes up just north of Huxley. There's a subdivision that's still in the county. Their road is gravel, too, but the city is paved out to here, and they'd like to see this stretch paved. It's almost going to have to be done with curb and gutter because there's no shoulder and a big ravine here it drops off. So I have concerns with paving it and people sliding off into that ravine. Right now it works better as a gravel, and their road's a gravel road, too. So I don't see it as a terribly high priority right now, but it comes up from time to time. This is also the subdivision that recently asked if we could use a motor grader to blade their road from time to time, and we just can't get into that on private roads. It is a private road. And this issue, again, this is Lincoln Way and Boone County Line. So this is paved. This is still gravel road. There's been some requests to pave this portion. There's apartments with dust issues, and apparently this was up for sale recently, so some developers are asking what the possibility of paving that road is. That's why I put it in here, but I haven't heard anything more since.
Is that our road? Or
it is our road. If it was paved, it would have to be paid for 50-50 Boone County and Story County, so we'd have to get Boone County involved if we were serious about it. But Ames may also be looking at possible annexations out there. So, and lastly, I want to discuss 600th Avenue and the farm-to-market system. A little difficult to see on here, but the green roads are the farm-to-market system as it stands today. 600th is right here. It is not on the farm-to-market system. We applied to put it on it, and we were turned down. They said the only way to get it on is to take roads off the system. I reviewed the map as a whole, and it is difficult to find roads to come off. The only ones I could find was this little stretch right here and possibly this little link in between the 30s. The reason for that is everywhere you see it connecting into another county, that county has a farm-to-market roads that connects with it. So interconnectivity is very high on the list when the farm-to-market review board. So they will not let you change those little stub roads because it connects into a farm-to-market road on the other side. So we'd have to find things internally, and really this right here and this, because it has paved on both ends, the system would really still be intact. So those would be my two suggestions, and I'd need feedback from the board if you want me to pursue.
Well, tell me about the traffic count on the one that's over there east of Cola. I mean, do we know the usage? What sits right there where that comes together? I can't even.
Oh, there's a railroad crossing in particular right in the middle that a lot of farmers don't like to cross. So that's kind of why I thought maybe that'd be a good idea to get that one off. I could check on the traffic counts. I don't have it on top of my head.
Well, specifically agricultural traffic counts. I want to know trucks and agricultural equipment's on there because, I mean, it's clear to me that 600th has become... It's become a farm-to-market route. I mean, that's exactly what it's being used for. So that would be my suggestion. I don't know if you guys see it differently than that.
That one would probably be.
Well, I'd like to, I mean, as I'm sitting here looking at it, I can visualize what we're talking about. It would be a little bit helpful to actually go out again, take a look at those particular areas. And you're saying that further south, I guess northeast of that, isn't it? No, let me see. Wait a minute. Nevada. That is connecting into a farm-to-market road, though, even though if we took it off. But
which one over here?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's got a paved road on both ends, so essentially it would only really be serving the people in between the 230s as a farm-to-market road.
And approximately how many residents are we talking about there?
I don't think anybody lives on it. It's kind of the Colo Boggs area. There's not a lot of homes in the area. It's
okay.
Well, I think, isn't that the ag dealer right there is on the south end of it, isn't it?
Talk about right on
right at the south end, I think so, yep.
And I think there's one residence. Other than that, I don't think there's anything there.
Well, if the board wants to pursue swapping something, I'll bring back next week a little more information on these two segments so we can...
Well, I think we've got to consider it because, you know, with the DuPont and Esco, once it's up and running and everything that we're seeing right now, it's inevitable that that's going to become an area that's going to be probably more heavily used than what we might imagine. And so the question really will be is, do we want to wait until we have more traffic evidence, or do we want to put something in place? Because either way you look at it, you've got to figure out the cost of whatever you're going to do, and that has to be factored in. Since it's not in the budget right now to do it, we've got to begin to make those decisions sooner rather than later. But I think...
The interchange discussions with the city of Nevada, and they're talking about the possible interchange now at Airport Road, which would have an impact on 600.
Sure would. Yeah, I'd like to learn more, Darren, about the possibility of shifting from the one east of Colo to 600, just what the process would be and what kind of actions we'd have to take and what the impact might be.
Okay. That kind of wraps up the pavement side of the discussion.
The only thing I had additional was 600th looked to me to be the same thing as Grand Avenue, that it came in the program last year as 17 and you moved it to 18. That's just something
that's something we've always done. If it's more of a wish list and we don't really have the funding set yet, we just kind of leave it in that fifth year, but that's up to you, whatever year you want to see it in.
I mean, for me, it seems that once we put something in that five-year program, we should have to take action to pull it back out of its spot or put something in. I mean, I think that's what we're saying. Now, maybe we want to move those to 18. I'm not saying we don't. I just think they should go to 17 unless we do something saying, no, they don't need to continue to move up.
The only concern, the DOT reviews these, and that the comment at the beginning about the program has to be fundable.
Yeah.
That's kind of why we keep in the fifth year. They kind of understand some of that. But when it starts to move up closer to the front, they're going to say, hey, what's going on here?
I mean, so, clearly, we got to make a decision of where we're going. And if 600th were to roll into the farm-to-market system, that would free up at least an area that dollars could come from. Not that it's creating new dollars. But
that one probably has more potential. So
okay.
Want to move them both up or just 600th?
That's what I'd like to see, unless there's a reason that they shouldn't continue to go up.
Just give us a little bit more of an analysis since this is the first time. And
okay.
I think, but it sounds like we need to factor in both of them at this point.
All right. So moving on to bridges, that's the third sheet. It says structures at the top. Now the first two, there's three sheets of structures. The first two you'll see all have numbers in the program here, so they're all in the program. There was a lot of additions in the bridge side of things. But just quickly, history on bridges. We have 276 bridges, 200 over 20 foot in length. Some of the condition information, and then funding. We get federal bridge funding of $326 a year. That's probably about our average bridge replacement cost, and that's what we get per year, and we have 276 bridges. So
replace them every 276 years.
Yeah, that's the design. If we can get a design life at 276, we'd be in good shape.
Go to work on that there.
And these are our older bridges. And these are our newer ones. You can see there's a lot more older ones than newer ones. These older ones, fortunately, are concrete, and we went through a stage where these are all wood bridges, which deteriorate much faster. That's the only reason these have lasted so long is because they were concrete. But you get that 75 to 100-year-old bridges, they become functionally obsolete, or they're almost unusable anyway. I'll touch on this at the very end, too, but just to get, this is my balance sheet for our three types of funds, farm to market, FM, SDP is our federal aid road, and the BRS is the federal aid bridge program. So the three columns are the revenues, expenditures coming out in the middle, and then our balance at the end. The good news is everything's in the black and the balances, but you can see by in 2015, our BR balance is under 100,000. We do have some balances in FM and SDP, and I'll address some of that towards the end here, why that is. How do I select bridges for the program? First thing I did this time was we have this map of load posted bridges on the farm to market routes. We want to have a farm to market system at least that's in decent shape, so we're going to try to address those bridges first. The ones with the yellow dots are the ones that are already in the program. We are currently working on this one and this one over here, improving some bridge beams and stuff, so getting those up to current, so they have no load posting anyway. So we only have a few left on here, but they weren't bad enough to add them to the program at this point. The next thing I'm going to do is look at the bridges that are federal aid eligible and are on the farm market system. And the third thing is we haven't got our bridge inspection results back yet. They're all completed, but when we get those back, we'll have a better idea what needs to be addressed more immediately. I guess the one I'd point out that's not in the program is this one, and that is a Skunk River Bridge. So that's a big one, and I'll show some photos of that later, but that's one we might need to start considering putting in the program, but it's going to be an expensive one. Again, this is the same form. You can see what year everything's in. I also added this year under the length. Bridges really don't have a length, so I put in new, meaning they're brand new additions to the program. So you can see everything else is pretty much the same. 2013 is pretty much already in process, so I'll start here with 2014 and number 7. These, we may get this one and the number 8 done yet this fall. We're going to try to do that. There's some smaller box culvert type projects. Number 9 is a pretty good sized bridge here north of Maxwell. It's right here, Indian Creek 9. It is on a farm-to-market road. That's why it was selected for replacement. It's kind of on a challenging curve here, but we're able to squeeze a bridge in here and keep it on the straightaway and not have to put curves and add a lot of cost to it. But it's a picture of the current bridge. This one's cracked, but the one on the other side is completely gone. It's fallen off, but it's in pretty rough shape. And yeah, we'll move on. This is the North Dakota, the Onion Creek one, Rick, you were asking about. That's right here. Picture of that bridge. It's got steel beams under it, and they're just rusted so bad. It's load posted just because of that, and there's no way to fix that. The steel is falling off. So it's just an age-related thing. It needs to be replaced. Fortunately, we're able to fit a box culvert in here, so we'll be able to get rid of those bridge rails and widen everything out. But so we're bumping this up to 2014, and we're able to use federal aid money to do this.
Absolutely. But this comes to me. We're getting ready to initiate a conversation with Ames and Gilbert, again, on the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. And to this point, Ames says that in the foreseeable future, they're growing out this way. They're going to annex this stuff. Now,
yeah.
I don't believe that that's really the way things are happening. I think everything's going north and now east. But at this point, anyway, Ames is still saying, well, we're going that way. To me, it makes a difference of if Ames keeps saying, this is where we're going, I'm going to take the position, well, then this is going to end up being your road. You figure it out.
I agree. And everything I've seen, though, up to this point has stopped just short of this bridge, and it develops.
Oh, well, you can understand why. You can understand why. Yeah.
I don't see it happening soon enough for the bridge, and this is the only bridge we have load posted on a paved route, and we have troubles even getting our trucks with sand, salt sand, across it at this point. So
and being able to go to a bulk box culvert is really a huge advantage.
Yeah. Right? This is a new addition. This is up, let me point out where it is here on the map first. It's right up in this area here. And it's the reason I added this, we have a lot of bridges of that time frame and type through this area. And this is a Farnham Market Road, and it's eligible now for federal aid money. So we want to get at least one of these replaced in the area to give access through. And it's very narrow. I think it's 18 foot wide, and it's about 100 years old. We just need to get one of these replaced in the area to give one good route through. This has been in the program, but this is on Berry Patch Road. This is one of those fracture critical, they call it. That means if one thing goes bad, the whole thing's going to fall in, and we have to get special inspections on these now with the snoopers. They have to get underneath the bridge. It's just costly for us to inspect. But again, this is 100 years old, and the concern with the inspectors always with these four corners is all that's supporting the bridge, and they're this corner in particular is almost gone, and when that falls, the bridge is going to fall in the drink. So that's a concern. Box culvert, south of Story City, that's been in the program. The next project, we're on number 18. This is a bridge deck overlay. This is a new addition. This, just to give you an idea what an overlay is, this is our last one we did south of Maxwell. You can see the condition of the deck. We got a chain it, we drag a chain on it and find where it's hollow, and we mark them out, and then they come in here and jackhammer those areas out, and then they overlay it, just extend the life of that bridge. And I think this bridge is 50 to 60 year age, so that's about the time we need to get it done. This is the bridge we're adding. This is south of Maxwell on S-27. It's been patched before. You can see all the patches in it, but you can usually get by with one patch cycle, and then you got to overlay the whole thing the next time because it gets too bad and it starts to come through the bottom of the deck. This is a new addition up south of Zeering. This one's so old we don't even have records on how old it is. So this center span holding it up is really in bad shape, so that needs to be replaced. This is one of our arches. This has been in the program. This is 300th Street, another one that is eligible for federal aid money, number 21. This is on West 190th. This is a new addition, but it's been on our radar for a long time. Another steel beam bridge. This is on the Winery Road over there again. It's just in a difficult location. The stream really meanders, and how we're going to fit something in here is going to be difficult, but this is why something needs to be done. That's the actual hole you can see through the beam. It's so rusted. Fortunately, it's mainly the outside ones that are rusted, so the middle's in better shape, but something's got to be done here in the short term.
I mean, is that a box culvert that's going to go in there, or does it have to be a new
one? So we're trying to get one to fit. It's difficult. We might have to put a curve in it or something, but we're going to try it. It really needs it. That's kind of a, if you know the bottom of that hill with the narrow bridge, it's not a good situation anyway. So I'd like to see a box there if we can get one to fit. This is another new addition south of Cambridge on 580th. What this will probably be is just an extension rather than a complete replacement. But they must have had right-of-way issues in the past, but the road curves around, so northbound traffic would run right into that headwall if they weren't paying attention. And had a lot of safety concerns about this over the years, and I've been wanting to get it in, but it'll probably end up just being an extension if we can get the right-of-way to do that. Another one that's a big safety concern for me is on Shipley Road. I got it in the program. It's a ways down, but you can see these headwalls are almost out to the edge of the the pavement, and they used to stick up high, but the road's been built up over time, and it's actually undersized too, which increases our velocities, and it really scouring out the channel on the outlet side. But that's a picture from the side. Those headwalls used to stick up further, but it's getting a lot of age to it too, so it needs to be in the program for replacement. This is just east of Fernald. This has been in the program. These are those precast concrete sections that we have. And the concrete pops off, and when that happens, we see the steel's already half rusted, gone, and the steel's really what's holding up the bridge. So what we've had to do on this, we keep moving the guardrails in on the bridge on top to restrict traffic coming on this, but you can see it's spreading in further, so that's why those need to be replaced. This is a new addition south of Colo. We are, as we speak, hopefully by the end of the week, have this poured. We're going to do a concrete repair, but this one has, I think, 18 pile in it, and a lot of them are getting bad, so it needs to be in the program for replacement, but we're just doing a temporary repair to buy us some time, but it's got a lot of backwall issues. You can see it's sloping back, and it's in poor shape. It's due for replacement. This is a one down by Maxwell that we had to restrict recently, 1 foot. And again, very old, narrow bridge. Looking from the underside, we've...
That sign's holding it up, huh?
Yeah. Try to hold the gravel on it. We do what we can. There's no steel or anything in there to really hold concrete up, so... But over time...
If you guys leave here today, you're not going to take any bridges going home.
That's probably been put there 10 years ago, so it's done a good job of holding it up. But. Now we're kind of getting out of the program ones into our wish list ones, so that's the third page of structures. I'll start with this one. This has become more of a problem just recently, as the board knows. This is one by Hickory Grove that we closed 2-3 weeks ago because of this situation. This piling was essentially debris had hit it and ice had hit it, and so the pile was gone. Just look at the difference. This was in 2001. You could see there was some damage, but by the time we get, this was earlier this winter. That's what kind of shape it was in a few weeks ago. And there was some repair options available to us, but then when I was on vacation, apparently we had some rain and an ice event come down. Again, from 2001, this is the, you can see a dark stretch there. That's actually a steel H pile. That was actually taken out. That's what it looks like now.
But we've got this bridge closed.
It is completely closed. Yeah, because it's sagging. You can see it. Light through here, it's got a big sag to it. Like I say, I think a car would take it down at this point. But this really limits our repair options. Before we were out here, we could almost drive a pile on the outside. But now we're talking stuff under the bridge. I think the caps are now cracked underneath. You almost have to dismantle the entire bridge to repair this now. And
how many comments have you gotten on the bridge being closed? I know it was restricted access there for a while, and you really hadn't gotten anything. What have you gotten now that you've closed it for a few weeks?
I have had some comments. One is Hertz Farm Management. They manage Carmar Farms, and that's most of this ground up here. It's really just a small strip that's actually farmed right here. They've commented they use it and told me they'd taken heavy loads over it, and I said, well, it's been posted 10 tons forever. So that scares me that they're taking heavy loads over it still. But
now show me where they have to go. If that bridge does not exist, where do they have to go?
Well, this is Highway 30, 1 mile to the north, and then over here is S-27 right here. That's about a two-mile stretch in there. But there's no home till we get almost a mile, and then we've got four homes. Well, I would assume most of the time come over here at S-27 and come up to Nevada. But it is, like I say, a very small, and I think their big concern is just getting the combine in there. It must come from this direction over here. So, yeah, it'd be essentially 6 miles around, if they want to get on 30. Otherwise, it's at least that to the south, too. I think it's about the same, 6 miles on the south stretch.
Is what they farm, which side of the bridge is that on?
It's on the west side. Right, the bridge is right here.
And everything that they, I mean, everything on that road belongs to Hertz. I mean, all the residences belong to the Hertz family.
Oh, they own the homes too? Oh, we did get a comment that Hertz finally got what they wanted, is a dead end road for these houses. So,
I think their equipment's going to come from the west because that's, you know, that's kind of their base of their farm operation for the family.
Okay.
West of that bridge. So,
Mike Cox, as I understand it, we have conservation employees that like to use that bridge when it was available. Is that right?
Yeah. That's it. From Nevada, you go south on S-27 and it to cut across to Hickory Grove, but
there's now you just wouldn't have the cut across. You got to go across on 30 and then come south.
I think down somewhere in Missouri, there's still a barge that operates going over to Quincy. And, you know, we can kind of go back to the old way of doing things, and this could be a conservation challenge, maybe a source of revenue, Mike. You ought to come be a little bit creative how we could have a barge that'll take people across there.
Okay? You're wanting to change the name of that road to Clinton's Crossing?
All right. Well, I haven't quite gotten the money yet.
I have one other comment, too, is this property owner right here. I think he just built a house right up north. So he owns this. It's all completely wooded, and there's a little stub on the west side of the bridge. It doesn't even have an access drive to it at this point. I assume he just used it for hunting. But he commented how would he access that. And if we closed it, he'd have to go 7 miles, 6-7 miles around.
Okay, but the concept of closing it right now is that we're still trying to evaluate and make some repairs to make it usable again. That's the primary factor, right?
Yeah, but with these recent developments, I'm not sure how we'd even repair it.
That's what I'm wondering.
It's a whole new bridge.
That's what I'm wondering.
And
about.
Even if we repaired it, we'd still be with a wood bridge that takes a considerable beating because the alignment of those piers don't line up with the stream. That's why it gets hit so hard.
Right.
I think we need to be looking at either total replacement or closure are our real options right now.
Right.
Repair just is going to be too costly to be putting into a wood bridge at this point.
Right. Total replacement is well over $1 million for a bridge like this?
I've got $600,000 for the bridge at this point. Okay. $600,000-$700,000 when you get all the design fees put into it.
Mm.
And at this point, it is not currently federal aid eligible, but I believe more than likely that will change with this last bridge inspection. It's obviously got a structural deficiency to the point where it's going to make it federal aid eligible. So that's something to keep in mind. If we wanted to use federal aid funds on it, it probably will be available soon.
But this is not a bridge that you would say we got to put at the top of our list to get done. We've got bigger priorities than this bridge. So for the foreseeable future, it's closed. My question would be, why do we even leave it standing? If we know that it's not used, we don't want anybody out. You said a car would take it down. What I was looking at, Toot and I jumping up and down on it would take it down.
Yep. We essentially have to, we did, the last one we did was north of Maxwell. We vacate the actual bridge and we tear it out to make sure there's no liability issues left with it.
That requires a public hearing.
That will, yes.
I would
that's what I tell everybody. Everybody has commented. I said if we do decide to go the closure route, we will have a public hearing to take all comments before the board has to weigh that option.
Well, I think any time we are beginning to risk potential of not only loss of lives possibility, even though it's closed right now, there are still people who may feel that they want to try to get around that. I think we've got to really weigh, you know, our ultimate options and come up and make a decision which way we're going to go sooner than later.
Okay. Next one's that bridge over the Skunk up north, south of Story City I mentioned earlier. It's a large bridge, another one of those fracture critical bridges. And I'll be interested to see how the load, it's been load posted, but it may decrease with this latest round of bridge inspections. But this is probably the next big bridge I see putting in the program. But again, we need to weigh, that would put a bridge every 2 miles on the Skunk south of Story City. Do we need a bridge every 2 miles is what we're going to have to weigh, because this will be another expensive one. This is one down by Cambridge. It's got bad pier piling under there, you can see. It's this bridge on the other side. This is what we call the hole in the wall. Now has the Heart of Iowa bike trail over it. But this is the bridge here, and it's on this stretch here, bike trail and the two bridges. I'd like to make that a level B road at some point, and I'll get that brought to the board sometime this year. We can't get over that bridge with a motor grader. It's already posted, I think, 5 or 7 tons, so we can't take a motor grader. So it's hard to plow snow on it. Nobody lives on it. It can still be used for ag uses in the summer if we make it level B, but that'd be my...
What ag equipment can get through the hole in the wall anyway?
Yeah, that's a challenge there.
Is that number 34?
You know, a good lawnmower would have trouble getting through there.
That's 32.
Okay. I'm just trying to write some notes here.
Then the next bridge is in the same area, unfortunately, is this one here, another Skunk River Bridge. Still holding up well, so I think it still has life in it. It's just really rough driving over it, but we'll just have to. They actually tried to close this one 20 years ago, and the public said no, so it's actually held on pretty well. It's just the deck is in terrible shape. This is Isaac Walton Bridge, we call it. We actually had a proposal to replace this one at one point, but to design the bridge, the flood elevations were way up, so it took an extremely long bridge. On a very low-traveled road, so as long as this one holds up, we'll keep it there. But like I say, when it goes bad, this is probably a closure, permanent closure on that one. This is up on the Hamilton County line, four-span bridge. The piling are going bad, and the caps are starting to really rot. And this one is not federally eligible, so it's going to be hard to fund. Again, not much traffic, 20 vehicles per day. Has to have at least 25 to get federal aid funding on it. And then this one is dropped out of our program in the background because we did this project around the corner. It's a historic bridge. We can't touch it, so we'd almost have to build around it at this point. But we have officially dropped that out of our program. It's not a long detour around, and now we have a really good access north-south. This is out to the Ames Water Treatment Plant. It's pretty much a twin to that bridge down south by Cambridge. We recently did the riprap repairs to protect the bridge, and again, it's holding up. But if this bridge ever did have serious issues, it would probably be a permanent closure, and the City of Ames has a private road on the backside by the interstate that they can't access. So I think that was what it was put in for in case this bridge was ever taken out.
They're in the process of building a new water or beginning the process of building new water treatment.
Correct. I don't know if that's going to eliminate this one or not, but that would be nice. I just wanted to address this one real quick again. This is Jerry Ryerson. Where are we? Oh, Jerry Ryerson's house here. He farms this ground, and there's a bridge, our historic bridge here. We finally got him that easement so he can get to this ground legally without crossing the bridge. And this is Ken Merrill Road in Ames. So we finally need to take some more official action to close this bridge and close it more permanently because people are still going across it. But now that we got Ryerson access, I think we'll take more of an official action here this year to get that closed. And kids do go out there and party on it and start fires on it, which isn't good either. That kind of wraps up my bridge discussion. Take any comments from the board on bridges, but
it seems to me, Darren, that it is, and I think we had this conversation last year, and I'm sure we'll have it again next year. It's time for us to come up with an almost do not resuscitate kind of list on our bridges of, okay, here's the system that we need. You mentioned, you know, is every 2 miles too much on the Skunk River? Seems to me we need to identify where we need to have good solid crossings. Understand that we're not going to be able long term to maintain 220 bridges. We're just not going to be able to. And let's start to put the dollars at the access points that we need. Get as much use out of everything else that we have as we can, but when the time comes that one of those bridges that's not at one of those access points that we identify, we're not going to put a whole lot of money in it. And yes, it's going to be inconvenient, but we've got to face. You already showed us we're $1 million a year short of just maintaining roadways. I would assume we're somewhere close to that much short on being able to really handle all the bridges that we have. We got to make these decisions, and I think it's most fair to the public to get as much input from them as we can on the front end, but also as much notice as possible on the back end that, hey, when this bridge goes bad, there are no plans to ever replace this one, and let's move ahead. So I don't know what you guys' feelings are on that, but that's what I
can. No, I think it's a good analysis, and I think the more information and the more upfront that we can be, I think we owe it to the public to address these concerns and, ultimately start the decision-making process.
I think we've been lucky that we haven't had to close more than we have. I mean, there's a lot of counties that have closed.
Oh, yeah, a lot of them.
Yeah.
I think it's just a fact of life that we're not going to be able to maintain them the way we have in the past. And it's going to be an inconvenience for people, but, I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, if it's not safe, we're going to have to close it.
And we can't keep them all. Even if funding starts to free up, even if we, kick more general dollars into this program, there's not enough money to really be able to maintain what's there in any scenario. So if you can help us through that, that'd be outstanding.
I got one last thing I'd like the board to consider. It's kind of a new. It affects the program. Had a lot of muddy spots out in the roads this spring with the thaw. That's rock related mostly. What I'd like to propose anyway, we haven't done this in a long time. I think they did it 20, 25 years ago. You can actually program a project to put rock on farm to market roads and use farm to market money to do that. You can see in the balance sheet here, farm to market. We have some balance there that goes quick when you pave a road, though. But we do have some balance there that I think the best way to use that money right now is probably to put some rock on our farm-to-market roads. Like I say, I'd have to program a project that would do that. And so something to think about if we don't get it in this year, but think about it for next year.
Well, and the other component of that conversation is what we do with 600th. And how that would impact the balance of this farm to market. So just, yeah. I mean, keep that in your mind as we have the conversation all the way through.
Right. And as you look at this balance sheet, keep in mind, too, you can borrow ahead in most of these funds. And I don't like to borrow too far ahead, but you can get ahead, so we don't have to be in the black there all the time. But with that, well, this is just another picture. I'll be back next week, and I'll probably have an item on the discuss state. This is State Street. Same situation, but there's no ditches for drainage, so it becomes a muddy mess. And it's not our road, but we maintain it, so we get all the complaints about it.
And you and Jessica are digging into that whole maintenance agreement. Because we have a maintenance agreement with DOT who has an agreement to handle it for Iowa State, right?
Is that but that it doesn't cover rebuilding a road. It's just that's for blading and snow removal. So we'll have to address who's going to do this work because we can't keep maintaining it at this condition. Just blading it does no good.
Well, and I'm curious to learn more about that whole maintenance agreement. Is it something that is beneficial to Story County? While I love helping out Iowa State and the DOT, we're not responsible for them. We're responsible for Story County. Yep. So.
We're meeting Thursday out on site, so I hope to find more about that, and I'll report back next week. And then I'll be back with the program next week for official approval. I'll leave the map here. And it's the draft program and maps on our website for anybody to see. So,
and you'll make the shift on Grant and 600th for us to review, and you'll bring back what we need to see on the farm-to-market shift on the area east of Colo to 600th, just what that would look like.
Correct. And if any of the public has comments on the proposed program, contact me or the board. Let us know, and we can look at that next week when we talk about final approval.
Okay. Great.
All right. Thank
Darren,
you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yep.
Well done. All right. Moving on. Medical technician position. And this is Deb. Oh, this is Ron. Sorry. Ron. Sorry, Ron.
Morning.
How you doing?
All right. We currently have a nurse position open, and I'm proposing that we fill it with a certified med aide, which is a med technician. This would save, according to Alyssa, approximately $10,000. So if the board has any questions or...
It's allowable. It's appropriate.
Most programs have one nurse at best, and we have three, or have had three positions. So this would take us down to two and leave us a med technician who would basically do the legwork for the nurses.
And this program is... if approved, it's listed DHS here. Do they sign off on that, or do
this think, above that? This is the medical technician position above that on your agenda. Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay. Now I got you. Okay. Gotcha. Yes.
I would move that we replace the vacant nurse position with medical tech.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Ron is done. Thanks.
Thank you.
Now it's Deb, and we're talking about agreement with DHS in order to receive mental health transition funds.
Everybody,
you mean it all got signed?
Yeah.
You have a copy of this?
Nah, don't worry about it. I can put it up here if you have it here.
I added it yesterday.
Yep. Got it. I got it. Yep. Right here.
Yeah, I'm good.
Good morning. And for a change, I come bearing good news. The mental health transition fund dollars is... There's something that they've been working on since the legislature adjourned last session a year ago. These are dollars through House File 160 that have been made available to about 26 counties that applied for transition funds back in November. And Story County will be a recipient to the tune of about $752,000. We received notification last Friday from the department on those dollars, and there is an agreement that needs to be reviewed and signed by Story County. And that agreement is there in front of you. Jessica Reynolds from the Story County Attorney's Office has reviewed this and had no concerns or any comments about it. So that's good. And I do have a message into the department about receiving some technical assistance, maybe through a conference call, just to maybe answer some questions that I have, the auditor's office may have, in terms of utilizing these dollars. Are there any questions or comments on the agreement?
Jessica, you reviewed this?
I have reviewed it, and it's ready to sign by the board.
And, Deb, we had talked in the past with Lisa Markley about the possibility of creating a new subcategory or somewhere where these $752,000 are completely segregated for paper trail purposes. Is that handled?
I believe the fund has, yeah, has been set up. And I think that's a great idea to have that subfund. There's also was a spreadsheet that came with the agreement that the department is, they're not requiring us to use it, but it's recommended to help further track the use of these dollars. Since the source of these dollars are federal funds, we have to be very careful about how we're using them. So I think any steps that we can take, it's worth the extra time to make sure we're using them as we're supposed to. And House File 160 did not have any language in it in terms of a timeline in which these dollars have to be used, so we can carry them over into fiscal year 14 as well.
Yeah, for me, Deb, and I just have you address this is best case scenario. If they were going to use those federal funds with all the strings attached, this gives us as much flexibility as possible.
Correct.
So the best of a bad situation, I guess, is the way I'm viewing it.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And then just from a procedural standpoint, too, we've had services that we've reduced funding to, and we have a waiting list of about five individuals. I plan to come back to the board next week to look at rescinding our waiting list and providing funding for services for those individuals, as well as looking at restoring the services that have been reduced and or cut.
Oh, okay. Good.
Good. Action from the board.
I would move approval of the signed agreement with the Department of Human Services to receive mental health transition funds as submitted.
Second.
Motion is second. Further discussion. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Approved.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Deb. Next item is a visit from our members of our county attorney's office talking about office security. And we have Tyler, Cindy, Latifa, and Tim coming to see us. Good morning. Please introduce yourself as you...
Sure. My name is Tyler East. I'm an assistant county attorney for Story County. So I appreciate the time the board is giving me to talk to you. And at the end, I'll answer any questions that you may have. But I was one of the two attorneys that was involved in the incident a couple weeks ago in the courthouse. I can't discuss case specifics. I'm ethically prohibited from doing that just because of an active case. I'm not here as a representative of the county attorney. I'm not here as a representative of the office. I'm here as an employee of Story County talking to my employers. There are inherent risks in my job, and I know that. But if you've watched the news lately, the risks are growing. Three prosecutors were shot in Texas in the last 3 months. In Boone County 2 weeks ago, a knife was pulled on an individual with a child. The world is changing. And my job is, I'm an employee of Story County, but I represent the people of the state of Iowa and what I do. And I speak to the court and I confront criminal defendants every day. And I say things that are hard to listen to. And it's hard. It's a tough job, but I do it because I enjoy it. But people are angry in the courthouse, and lives have changed forever and ever in criminal court and in family court and so on and so forth. But what happened in the courthouse a couple weeks ago, in my opinion, wasn't just an attack on or an alleged attack on myself and another county attorney. It was an attack on the rule of law and the system of justice that I represent. And people in the courthouse and in the courtroom specifically have to feel free to speak to the court with candor and with the ideals that they represent. And if they don't feel safe, they can't do that. I'm at the mercy of the board and the sheriff's department. I'm an employee of Story County, but I can't dictate the security that's present in the county courthouse. And I understand this is a budgetary discussion. This is not in a vacuum. I understand resources take money. But what I would ask the Board of Supervisors is some semblance of security. I don't mean to be blunt, but there is no security. There's none. I walk through an unplugged metal detector every day. To me, that shows the lack of security in our courthouse. I'm not asking for security force. I'm not asking for a new unit. I'm not asking for 5, 6, 7 deputies. I'm asking for a presence of security in your courthouse, not just as supervisors, but as citizens of the state and citizens of the county. I am a new employee here. I've only been here for about 5 months. I've been in numerous courthouses around the state of Iowa, some with no security and some with security presence. And I can tell you, just with the presence of a deputy, the vibe of the courthouse changes just by knowing that there's somebody there. I would implore you, if you look at counties around, I compare this county to Dallas County. Dallas County has made a priority of security in their courthouse. They have an active deputy in any courtroom that's being used. They have metal detectors and x-ray. They have a deputy watching cameras. Just their sole job is to watch cameras in the courtrooms. But just don't take my word for it. If you want to discuss it with members of the Story County Bar, talk with them. If you want to discuss it with members of the bench, talk with them. State employees that work at the courthouse, talk with them. I have. And there's a fear. And I don't think anybody should have to work in fear of their safety. So what can be done? I think, and I express this to the board, and this is not the board's fault, but nothing's been done since this happened. Nothing. Nobody's come and talked to me.
I would disagree. Something has been done. Okay.
Well, can I ask? I don't know what's been done then.
Well, maybe you haven't been talked to directly.
I haven't.
And there's probably, and I don't know why you haven't been talked to directly on that. But there have been some steps taken at the end of the day by the jail to make sure that that area is secure, that there is a walkthrough before they lock down the buildings at 5 o'clock or whatever, to make sure that everyone is not in that particular area. And there is ongoing discussions right now with the Sheriff's Department and the County Attorney's Office regarding what we can do in the future to address the issues that you're bringing forth to us. There's potentially several scenarios. They're all in the discussion stage. I yesterday had a meeting prior to this with Assistant County Attorney Jessica Reynolds, letting her know that the board is very much concerned about what we can do to address the issue. I then went over and met with the sheriff and his command staff. We talked about several options again, and we are going to be moving forward with trying to address these topics and looking at what is the most feasible way to try to provide that level of security to the best of our ability. Obviously, we also recognize there are some challenges ahead as we move forward. But this incident probably just brought to mind again that there are some things that perhaps we can do, and it may be not that we can say that we can eliminate all circumstances similar to this, but I do think that you will see the board committed to working with the county attorney, with the sheriff, with the court system in terms of how we can move forward.
And, Wayne, I would just add, and first of all, Tyler, I really appreciate you coming and talking to mm-hmm. us today. I would just add that while the incident has heightened definitely public awareness of this issue,
It's not a new issue for us. It's something that, we've been talking about, Paul, since you and I came on the board, and Wayne, I'm sure you were talking about way before that, but it is also bigger than the county courthouse. You've got another office that Latifah is housed in over in the Human Services Building in Ames. We also have Community Life Program over in Ames. We also have this building. Are you telling me that people, when they come in to pay their taxes with the treasurer, there's not potential for issues? And so for us, as we sit here and look at it, and I'm not disagreeing with anything you said, it is a much bigger issue than having a deputy available at the courthouse and trying to figure out the logistics of, how not only you address what happened with you and what can potentially happen, but long term we look at this in a viable, feasible manner. And Wayne, you said you met with Jessica yesterday. I met with County Attorney Holmes and Jessica yesterday, and one of the topics we discussed is security at all the buildings and how we're going to address that. And so I think we're all on the same team in trying to get something done. We just got to figure out how to do it.
Well, and I don't want my comments to come off as what's visible to me. I do agree that the Board of Supervisors has approached the Sheriff's Department, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate the priority. I can tell you I hope the sweeps are being done. I haven't seen them, but I hope. I know that you've made the request, Supervisor Clinton, and I appreciate that. That's the day of. I very much appreciate that. I also know that the sheriff is an independent elected official, and he runs, you know, his department. And Supervisor Sanders, I understand security is a countywide concern. I guess I'm speaking from as an employee of the county attorney's office and working in the courthouse. Not to discount any other offices or any other areas of the county, but the courthouse itself is an extremely volatile area. And I think my, not request, but my wish to see some presence is, it might not do anything, but it would at least put in the minds of people entering that courthouse on a daily basis that there is a presence. So my comments are not meant to discount any actions that the Board of Supervisors has made, and I appreciate that very much. But, you know, it's a concern, and that's why I wanted to come talk to you just as an employee, not as a representative of the office. So I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. We appreciate you being
here.
Thank
you. Absolutely.
Latifah.
I just wanted to address the situation in the Ames office, which is not something that's unknown to you. You know that we're secluded. You know that there's no law enforcement presence in that building at all. And I just wanted to reiterate the fact that the people that are coming into that office now every day have a really diverse criminal background, and many of them have a very violent background, and we are sitting down with them in our small lobby and working with them face-to-face, which I think works well for what the program does, but I think puts us in a very vulnerable position. And so I just wanted to make sure that that was part of the thought process. A few of us kind of came up with some ideas for things that might help at least make us feel more secure. I don't know if they would do anything, but some of the suggestions were maybe having a camera in the lobby, some sort of surveillance, something. I don't know who would be in charge of watching it or if anybody would be in charge of watching it, but it would be nice to have that there and have a sign posted so that everyone entering the office knew that this was being filmed. Changing our glass. Right now it's just this, I don't know what kind, just breakable glass that slides back and forth. Anybody could just climb through the window and get in if they really wanted to. A panic button would be great. I understand there's changes with the phone system and a panic feature being put in with the phone system. I think that's fabulous. A question about our parking lot security. I don't know what could be done about that, but I know at night if there's one or two of us walking out with the halfway house just, you know, around the corner and the homeless shelter around the corner, there are a lot of times that we don't feel very secure walking out. And sometimes one of us has to work late and we're the only one. And that I've been in that situation and it's really unnerving. Shelley Beard suggested Alice training maybe for our office, which several of us thought was a really good idea.
I know the treasurer's office just went through it and they thought it was outstanding.
Okay, yeah, I think that would be great. And also, along the same lines as sweeping the Justice Center, we were talking about maybe it would be possible to sweep the community services building at 4:30, because most of the people in that building leave at 4:30. Our office is open, and I understand DHS is open, but I think they only have a couple people on staff. They're downstairs. We're upstairs. So would it be possible to have the doors auto-lock at 4:30, and then any appointments that we make or anybody we know is coming after 4:30, it would be that person's responsibility or that office's responsibility to meet them at the door, escort them in, and escort them out?
I mean, take that last one, for example. Again, we have different hours than from DHS. Is that
right.
Correct?
Well, I think DHS is open until 5.
Until 5,
right. But the rest of the offices in that building, I believe everybody leaves at 4:30. So we're still there until 5 upstairs, and DHS is still there until 5.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think all really, really good suggestions. And I'm going to go one beyond that. There are conversations right now going on related to the county attorney, space issues. I mean, it's no secret to you guys that you're on top of each other, that there's not enough space for our county attorney's office. And so, again, looking at this, I've said, on a more holistic, long-term thought process, is one of the things for the county attorney's office is what does your actual office situation look like in the future? Is the back of the human services, the top back of the human services building, the appropriate spot? I'm not convinced it is, and it's something we're trying to work through. But we do need to address the reality of the here and now as well at whatever level we can. There have been conversations about a new camera system for this building. I think it's completely appropriate for us to look at that for the human services building. We are beginning discussions of a full sweep of every one of our buildings at closing time. I'm not sure how a 4:30, I think the door locks right at 5 now. I'm not sure how a 4:30 would work. We'd need to bring DHS into those conversations. But I think any and all of this needs to be on the table for discussion as we figure it out. And I'm really appreciative that you guys are here. The biggest thing we can do is we can understand that we all, Tyler, you correctly pointed out that you've chosen a profession where you're going to be in an adversarial role. And I'll just point out for everybody else, Tyler, in his free time, he wants to get away from being in that adversarial role, so he goes and officiates basketball games, because we all know that basketball officials are beloved. But we've all chosen to be in an area where from time to time we're going to make people upset. And we need to be diligent about that. We need to not put ourselves in positions whenever we can help it, where we are the only one in the office. And if we are the only one in the office, we need to make sure that somebody's aware of that, and we've got a protocol for dealing with that. What I will guarantee all of you is, Paul's got 30-whatever years in law enforcement. We're committed to trying to ensure that Story County is a great, safe place to work. And we need to address a lot of these things. I just don't know what the answers are right now, and that's the problem.
Well, I think the what's helpful is, again, the brainstorming of potential things that we can take a look at that we see that may have an impact. And as we go on to this list and some others, I'm sure there's going to be several other things depending upon which building we're talking about. But that, again, is something that I think we can begin to factor in how we can make some significant changes that would bring about a more secure and safe environment for all. While employees and as employees, obviously you're important, but we also have public coming in too, and sometimes you can have incidents and the public is right in the crossfires of whatever's going on. So whenever you are in a situation like it as a county, I said we need to be cognizant of addressing this, and this board will.
Absolutely. Thank you. Anybody? Is there anybody else you'd like to address?
My name is Cindy Kepsel. I'm a victim witness coordinator in the county attorney's office, and please bear with me. I'm still a little shocky after that bridge report. But and some of the things I say may be repetitive, but I prepared my notes, and I'm glad I did again because of that report. But I worked in the Justice Center since it was opened. Safety has been a concern since the day we moved into the facility. My concerns are two-pronged. My first concern addresses the victims, witnesses, and jurors, citizens who come into our building as a result of crime. As you know, there is only one public entrance to the building. This requires that our witnesses walk past the defendants, their friends, families, and supporters to reach our office or the courtroom. People who have been sexually assaulted, brutally beaten, or their lives threatened have to walk by their perpetrator and or supporters. It is already difficult enough to testify against someone. It becomes incredibly difficult when a person does so after threats and intimidation. We know that threats and intimidation often happen to our witnesses before the police reports are made. Those threats may continue through the prosecution. That intimidation should never be carried into the Justice Center. Jurors are not exempt from this intimidation. A prime example of this would be a trial where a high school student was testifying. The defendant's friends lounged in the hallway and glared at the jurors when they were in the public area. Later in the trial, the defendant's friends came into the courtroom gallery. They separated and lounged throughout the gallery, stretched their arms across the tops of the benches, taking up as much room as possible. In spite of this, the defendant was found guilty of unauthorized possession of an offensive weapon, a sawed-off shotgun. But the intimidation did work to an extent. All but one of the jurors requested an escort to their cars at the end of the day. The second prong I will address is my personal safety. I'm not speaking for the office, just for myself. I have to walk that same hallway numerous times in a day. I sat in the courtroom gallery among the men who were trying to intimidate the witness and jury through the trial. My back and the back of the prosecutor were to the defendant's friends. I have escorted witnesses into and out of the building because a defendant or defendant supporter was in the building or parking lot. Many times I or other victim witness coordinators have sat in the courtroom alone with the defendant and his or her supporters when the attorneys and judge leave the courtroom for private discussion off the record. Some of those times I was with the victim in the courtroom and the defendant would try to make contact with the victim in spite of a no contact order. Just outside our office door is the entrance to juvenile court. Victim witness shares a wall with the juvenile courtroom. Yesterday, I heard the joyous clapping resulting from the adoption of a little beautiful girl. How awful if that family had been coming out of the juvenile court when someone's anger exploded in the hallway. People come to the courthouse for all kinds of reasons. A large share of those people are defendants and their supporters. Some of them are angry, depressed, desperate, high, or a combination of any of those. Some of them suffer from mental health issues. In our office, I have seen a woman beat her head on a block wall and another violently punch herself in the face. That could have easily been directed at one of us. The clerk of court and court close at 4:30. Hopefully someone will begin checking the hallways, checking the conference rooms, checking the courtrooms, and the bathrooms. We walk past a floor-to-ceiling window, so anybody could be up across the street or a fairway, and they see when we're headed toward the door. The odds of something happening in the Justice Center or the Human Services Building are exponentially higher than other county offices, and I don't discount that there's a certain level in every office. But we prosecute a lot of people with anger and mental health issues. They are required to come to those buildings. The percentages are different. And they are coming there for some of the most stressful events in their lives. We keep pictures of the ones we have the most concerns about in our reception area. Maybe our administrative assistant will have a chance to call for help before injury or worse occurs. Maybe not. I have run many scenarios through my head of what to do if someone with a gun or a knife or simply intent comes after us. Where do we go? What do? How do we get there? How do we call for help? I practice these scenarios in my mind because you react as you've practiced, as Paul knows from training. I'm afraid no current plan will ever be enough. You've asked for ideas, and maybe you've discussed this, but one thing that we have always talked about is the fact that it's just the front entrance. That's the only entrance. We have brought witnesses and victims through our back door so that they would not have to face or be intimidated by those who've already perpetrated a crime against them. But we need a parking lot in the back. And I know you talk about changes to the building and that sort of thing, but that we need a safe place for our employees to park and for our witnesses. That's all I have.
Thank you. It's the first time I've heard anybody express that we need a second entrance there. So I'm appreciative of that. That helps me as I mentioned that Stephen and Jessica and I met yesterday as we start to try to work through what long term the courthouse is going to look like and where the county attorney is going to be housed and how we're going to do things. That's helpful. Thank you very much.
Yesterday, Cal brought me in a copy of the original plans. And originally, when that building was built, the plans were for a parking lot in the back.
We would not, at least we wouldn't have to walk down that single hallway past the defendants and their families, and we could bring our witnesses in that same way.
Well, really appreciative of you coming and talking to us. What I'll say to all of you is everything's on the table. I mean, there are budgetary implications. We do have limited resources. I'm proud to say that this board is operating in a fiscally prudent manner where maybe we have a little more availability than we've had in the past of some of those fiscal resources. But there is there are limits to what we can do. But everything needs to be on the table. I mean, and for me, it needs to be long-term practical solutions that we look at implementing. So I'm appreciative of any thoughts and ideas, and we'll just see what we're able to get to. So thank you.
One other thing I would suggest is there are cameras in the Justice Center. Wherever you have cameras, if you put them in the Human Services building, if you put them in every building, that you put a sign up that says cameras are operating. Because if they know they're being filmed, it does have some deterrent effect, I think, for some people. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much. Absolutely. Let's see. The only one I had listed on my agenda that we didn't hear from is Tim. I don't know if Tim's here or wants to address us. Or is there anybody else who would like to address us on this? Okay. Thank you to all of you who came over and those of you who addressed us. Anything to add, Wayne or Paul?
No. I'm just wondering. And Jessica, would you be the point of contact for the county attorney's office as we are having some of the discussions? And my concern is, again, is as we make some decisions, how the best way to communicate to your staff as to what some of those are and so forth. So can we rely on you to be our point of contact and as we engage in those conversations? That doesn't mean that you'll be in every meeting of discussion, but you'll be certainly briefed about, you know, what it is and how we can move forward. And as we take a look at some of these suggestions and look at overall facilities and the way it's operated now and laid out as we move forward in the future, I think it's important that we can get that information out.
Absolutely. Our office does have a Friday staff meeting, so I can update the entire office every Friday about anything that the board would like me to do so.
And necessarily, if it ever becomes necessary from once in a while, one of us will gladly come up to a meeting if there's an opportunity.
You're always welcome. Okay. Always.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Oh, and Teresa, Alice training was mentioned. Can we count on you to coordinate that possibility? Doing it countywide?
Yeah.
Going to do Alice training countywide. Perfect.
Right.
Agency reports, Heartland Senior Services. I don't see Liz. Oh, looks like we've got a... Nope. All right, we'll move on. Nothing from Heartland Senior Services today. Environmental health, Margaret.
Good get a signal here.
Maybe mouse? Thank you, everybody.
Okay. Thank you.
Go ahead. You don't have to wait for Wayne. He'll be back in just a minute.
All right. Thank you. Well, it won't go bigger. Let's see. There we go. Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
April 2nd, 2013. It's hard to believe it's April already. And the one thing I want to say about bridges is, should I, you drive fast or slow over them? Because I can't avoid a lot of them. Fast.
If it collapses, okay. You want it to all be over in a hurry.
Take the equipment out and cross. Okay, so septic numbers. We've had 10 time of transfer inspections so far this year. Only one new permit, 16 applications on file, one repair, 5 binding agreements that are left over from the time of transfers, and 7 outstanding septic notice of violations. So we have about 20 systems in the works that are ready to go in as soon as they can work the soil. For wells, so far this year we've had 10, 7 are geothermals, 3 are water. We've done just a little bit with plugging, 3 this year so far, and 6 well inspections. We still have $15,000 remaining in our grants to counties fund, which is really high for this time of year. Usually we're out of money. I'm not sure what's going on with that. I'm hopeful that with the real estate market picking up, we will be discovering some of these wells that need to be plugged. Lead inspection program, I currently have 10 open cases, 3 with children residing. The other ones are vacant. One case has a court date set. I think I just heard from Jessica that it's been postponed again until August. And then one case in Nevada here requested a closeout, and they failed miserably on the dust test. So that's money and resources down the drain on that. The one that I just did earlier this week found no lead hazards, so now we have to move on and do the daycare that the baby attends. So this could turn into a fairly large project if we can't find the source. Complaints, there's been quite a variety of complaints this past quarter. Mold in a Nevada rental, they call for advice on that. We had a call about a large quantity of mercury found in someone's closet, and presumably like a former science teacher or something, so we had to direct them on how to dispose of that properly. Open burning citation by IDNR. DNR was in the area inspecting hog confinement burning, and they just happened to come upon someone else burning. And the people that complain about DNR said that they've been doing this for 40 years, and now all of a sudden they can't. So I'm working with them to do a variance to DNR to continue doing this if it's appropriate. Composting dead animals, got a call on that. Dead bugs in an Ames hotel, we get more and more calls on dead bugs. Cellulosic plant discharges and water withdrawals, concern about the discharges to the creek impacting the water there. And then also the water withdrawals. I don't know, the city of Nevada has started up their monitoring program again. There are gauges on the private wells in the area of the Nevada wells just to see if their wells are being impacted. And then just this morning I received a call from a guy that lives in Maxwell about the sewage lagoon odor. That's very typical of spring. You're getting the inversion and it's mixing and you get the odor, but it usually takes care of itself. Training meetings, a lot of training. That's kind of the nature of the beast when you're in environmental health. We all attended the Iowa. That's the Septic System annual conference. I attended the Avantix training, which is sort of a technical septic system that people are allowed to put in. And then Matt and Kathy attended the pool operator certification, so those two are certified, and then I will go in May and become certified. Matt was able to go to the radon program in Washington, D.C. Grant covered 100% of his trip and training. I've been working with planning and development. Charlie is chairing the committee regarding subdivision regulation revisions. Our part in it is how we approach septic systems and wells when land is being subdivided. So right now on our books, we require that if it's subdivided into two buildable lots, they have to hire an engineer or a soil professional to do the site reviews. Sometimes you get these large subdivisions and I just can't take the time out to do 10 lots. Another thing that I would like to see, and we'd have to work with Jessica Reynolds on this, is to require that if there's an existing house associated with a split, that that house be inspected to make sure their septic system is up to...
Which we just did this morning.
Exactly. Outreach. I set up a Coyotes class and testing. We had 18 people come and take the test. That Coyotes is what the it's a certified installer for septic systems. And in 2015, the county will be requiring that certification. So I did set up a test to be given. And 18 people, so we're getting there. A lot of interest, and I think a lot was accomplished. I attended the Farm Family Expo thing in Nevada to get the word out about the programs that Environmental Health has. Rick Sanders and I met with Gabrielle regarding confinements, and this is an interview thing that she's doing for the public radio, I believe. I also gave her some context of people who are in the industry so that she can get the other side of the issue, too. We send out reminder postcards to septic owners that are required to have contracts. Those are for those high-tech systems. Manually, they have to have those inspected, and we need to see a copy of those contracts. And I sent a letter out to the certified drillers talking a little bit about control of the drilling mud, how that's becoming an issue, some, especially with these geotech wells. There's, you know, a nest of wells drilled. They can't be putting that mud into city storm sewers or creeks, things like that. Miscellaneous, this past quarter we did the budget workshop. I've been attending the Ames Story subdivision meetings when we have those fringe issues. I've done the evaluations for my employees. I reviewed the ESF-11 that Emergency Management did. He did a great job on that, a lot of work. Kudos to Keith on that. Started attending the goal-setting workshop for the county, and I did a presentation to the Hunsaker Realtors regarding septic and wells, radon and lead. And coming up, we have the annual contractors meeting in this room this Friday. We're going to continue to review files for scanning, and then IT is helping us resolve our scanning issue problems. That one went south on us pretty quick. I have a presentation to do at DNR on the 11th. Bedbug webinar coming up, and then we have more pool, tanning, and tattoo training because that's all new to us, so that's pretty intense training. Septic pumper inspections will be starting up, and then field work. I did my first site review, and still frost in the ground at about 36 inches, so it's still kind of tough to do, but I think in a couple of weeks we'll be doing our field work.
Good.
That's all I have for today. Any questions?
Thanks, Margaret. Questions for Margaret?
Bugs, septic tanks, tanning.
I know. My head
Plectic.
Is swimming.
Thank you, Margaret.
Outstanding. Thanks, Margaret.
You're going to change this up a little bit for this afternoon's Board of Health so I don't have to sit.
I am going to add a few things just to keep you
okay. Liaison assignments, committee meeting updates. Wayne.
Just briefly, I did mention that I had meetings yesterday with County Attorney Jessica and also the sheriff regarding safety issues and so forth. did not meet with Ron. We are now set up a regularly scheduled meeting, so every first and third meeting I will be meeting with CLP and on issues, and Deb and I will continue to meet on the other times of the month. I think it's the second and fourth meetings.
All right. Paul, anything? I pass as well. Other reports, nothing. Public forum number two. This is an opportunity for members of the public to make comments to the Board of Supervisors on items not on today's agenda. Board may not take any action on those comments due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but we may do so in the future. Leanne. All right.
March 29th, the Planning and Zoning, Planning and Development Department and the Board of Supervisors both received notice of a letter from FEMA dated March 29th regarding the PMR's physical map revision to Whirly Creek and College Creek. This action is basically, receipt of that letter basically puts into play a 30-day time frame that Story County and the City of Ames as well can provide written comments back to FEMA and or the contractors. With your blessing, I'd like to place this on next Tuesday's agenda for two actions. One, that you formally acknowledge receipt of that, and then two, that you have an opportunity to outline any comments that we provide in writing. And also following this meeting today, I will be emailing the county engineer and other departments the link to where the physical map revision documents are, and then put on that link on our website as well. But this is an official time frame that started as of March 29th. The 30 days starts at that point.
Please get it on our agenda for next week. Be outstanding. Thank you. And now we have a request from Civil Attorney Reynolds that we go to closed session, so I'd ask you
announcements from supervisors. Announcements
from the supervisors. Any announcements, Wayne?
Pass.
Paul? Pass. Now, Jessica.
This part in open session.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Okay. Hey, Nance.
Go ahead, Jessica.
Pursuant to Iowa Code Section 21.5, sub 1, sub C, the County Attorney's Office respectfully requests that the Board convene a closed session regarding imminent litigation.
Auditor respectfully requests that we take a short break before we go into closed session.
Okay.
Do we need a motion to go into closed session?
Yes, we do.
I'll make that motion.
Been moved. I will second it.
It has been moved and seconded to go into closed session, too. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. We'll take a 5-minute recess and then we'll go into closed session.
Good. All right.
All right. We're back in open session. Coming out of closed session. Jessica, please do what's appropriate.
The County Attorney's Office is requesting board action to authorize the County Attorney's Office on behalf of Story County and the Story County Conservation Board to file suit against the Underground Company Limited.
I would approve the motion as submitted.
All right, we have a motion. Do we have a second? Is there any discussion on an item like this, or is this just action of the board? I would say probably just action of the board. So, Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Granted. Further business for the Board of Supervisors today?
Move adjournment.
Have a motion and a second. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye. We are adjourned. What happens at one?
Safety meeting.
Oh, good. You guys have fun in that safety meeting. We got you a new safety meeting member, Renee Tweed.
How you work?
Stuck her butt on there.
Oh,
well, she had questions. If you have questions, you're on.
I'll send you a
petition. That's what I said. Sweet wanted to come. I said, sure, she can come as long as she's on the safety committee. Come on.
I will be shocked.